Team position with Joint Committee on Wind and Natural Resource Subcommittee. Today, at the request of the Chair, we're going to hear about natural resource benchmarks. We have invited testimony from Dr. Paul Richard, President of Oregon State University, and Jeffrey Tryon, Executive Director of the Oregon Progress Board. We have discussed earlier that setting some benchmarks for natural resource agencies might be a useful tool to measure progress. And we have benchmarks under discussion in a number of natural resource areas, and we are trying to set some goals for restoration of endangered species. We don't have benchmarks for some of the issues that face this committee on clean water, clean air, forest health, and some other issues. So what we'd like to do this morning is just get a better concept of how benchmarks are used to move toward achievable objectives from a public policy standpoint. And to do that, we would like to call back to Paul Risser and Jeffrey Tryon to the podium and ask them to show us what the Oregon's environmental benchmarks look like at this point.
Good. Thank you, Chairman Ferrioli, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Paul Risser, President of Oregon State. In this capacity today, however, I am serving as chair of the science panel, which is working on the state environment report. I'm going to ask, the way we'll go about this morning is I'll ask Jeff to first tell you where we are in terms of the benchmarks, and then we'll go from there to where we are in terms of the science panel.
Thank you, Paul. For the record, my name is Jeffrey Chines. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Progress Board. What I'd like to do is just spend a minute on how the benchmarks fit into state government structure. I know a number of you have seen my slides before. I will be very, very brief with this, but I want to give you a little bit of context. The benchmarks overall are part of Oregon's strategic planning process, started in 1989, created in statute in 89, reauthorized in 1997. This process is a permanent part of state government now. The Progress Board is responsible for creation of the strategic plan called Oregon Shines. For those of you who haven't seen our recent reports, the reports that we did for the 99 legislature, I have copies here. And the board also is responsible for overseeing the way the plan is rolling out. Governor chairs the board. We update the plan every 6 years, and we just did that 2 years ago. What makes this plan unique really is the benchmarks, which are about focusing on results, what's actually occurring in Oregon that matters to Oregonians, not how hard we're trying. The benchmarks are reviewed every 2 years. Progress Board reviews them. We hold hearings. Anyone can suggest a change. We get letters regularly from folks saying, well, what about measuring this? What about measuring that? We are restricted to no more than 100 for all the benchmarks. That was one of the things that came out of our last review process. Since 1989, over 7,000 Oregonians have individually been involved in the Oregon Shines process in terms of either being involved in meetings, helping us review benchmarks, etc. And currently, the benchmarks in the environment area are under review by a working group made up of scientists, citizens, and interest groups. And that is part of this State of the Environment report process you'll hear about a little later on, is that we are looking at significantly revising the benchmark the next time around when we release them in the year 2001. It's important to note that not all the benchmarks are the responsibility or even the priority of state government, and not everything that occurs in state government is represented in the benchmark. These are for Oregon as a whole, and part of our job has been to help translate which of the benchmarks are most relevant to which state agencies, and then how do they link into them. We haven't done a lot of work in the environment area with that, but we've done a lot in a number of other areas, most notably in the economy area and in the area of social supports. And I'd be very happy to work with this committee on how to link agencies more closely in with relevant with the benchmarks that are relevant in their areas. One of the things that's also important to note is that the benchmarks are only one part of the equation for how you actually monitor progress. They represent the big picture. Agency workloads are represented by something that we historically called agency performance measures. What we've done a lot of work on is how to create interim indicators, those indicators that are larger than an agency has control over, but not as large as the benchmarks, which we can then look at and measure progress. We've done a lot of work in the salmon plan area on that particular issue. Let me get into the benchmarks that are in what we call the environment area. And each of the benchmarks that you will see has a performance target, which is this X out here, which is where the progress board, in consultation with agencies and in consultation with citizens and with a minimum amount of legislative involvement, has laid out as where we'd like to be in the year 2000. All the columns you will see is where we have been starting in the year 1990. And then you'll see up here names of the agencies that show themselves as having a primary link into the benchmark, that they have some responsibility for helping Oregon achieve that outcome that we have here. All of these agencies are aware of what the targets are. They've all had input into what that number ought to be. We assign a grade every 2 years for each of the benchmarks, and just let me explain just real quickly how that happens. What we do is we start at the first year that we have the data for, which is usually 1990 or 1991, and then we draw a straight line between there and what we want the target to be for the year 2000. If where we are in the year that we're doing the measurement is above that line, we give an A. If we went the wrong way, that is, if we're worse off than we were when we started, we give an F. And then if we're somewhere in between, we split the difference. So you'll be seeing A's, B's, C's, D's, and F's, and that's what it means. If we have an A, it means we're right on track for achieving the target that we set out. If we have an F, it means that we're headed the wrong way. And if we have one of those letters in between, it means that we're one-third, two-thirds of the way towards the target, but we're not on track for achieving that outcome. Here's a report card overall. These are all the benchmarks which are in this area. I will look at these one at a time with you. But I wanted to note here that if you looked at the grades that the Progress Board assigned this time, they were pretty low. The grades in the environment area, for a couple of reasons, some of which we have control over and some of which we haven't, are probably the highest of any area that we look at. So as you'll see, we've got a lot of A's, we've got a few F's, and we've got a couple of C's. So there's not a lot in between. We either are on track for hitting the target or else we're headed the wrong way overall. So let's look at each of these, and if you have any questions, please just stop and ask. First one we look at is air quality. And this is one that's used by the Department of Environmental Quality. It is whether we're meeting federal standards in our various metropolitan airsheds. And in 1997, 100% of the airsheds were at standard. So we believe we're on track actually through at least the year 2000 to continue that trend. So we get an A. You'll see the grade down here in the lower right hand. The Progress Board assigned an A in that area. In terms of carbon dioxide, which is the way we measure our impact on climate change, we have seen an increase in that output all the way through 1994. We dropped down some in 95-96. We probably won't achieve the target there. And there are a number of reasons for that. One of the things we measure is the amount of time it takes to issue an air contaminant and a wastewater permit.
Francis, can I ask you to regress one slide?
Yes, Senator.
If the sulfur content of gasoline drops, which it's expected to do in 2 to 3 years, mm-hmm. your F goes to an A automatically. Without any further activity, is that based on carbon dioxide emissions?
I don't know that to be a fact, Senator. But if you're right, then it would. My understanding is most of this comes from power from the generation of electrical power is where most of the carbon dioxide in Oregon is coming from.
From our gas-fired plants and Boardman and so forth.
Yeah.
We've been listening to the Department of Environmental Quality talk about air quality standards and issues and emissions in Portland area. And one of the things that we've kind of focused on is we've got this huge emission testing project going on up there to certify automobiles and emission standards, and everybody has to get their car with a sticker and the certification process. And most of that just flat goes away when the sulfur content goes down, and we'll achieve almost all of the goals for air quality in the DEQ current direction. When that happens, and I guess it's federally mandated that it happen within about 3 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if that isn't influenced by the weather patterns as well. We're in 97, 98, 99, or at least 98, 99 into a wetter pattern. Would that have an impact on
As I understand it, Representative Nestle, this is actually measurements that are I was going to say that these are mainly measurements from point sources, but I think that's not true. I don't know the answer to that question, but I would be happy to find out for you.
Anyway, I guess the question I have related more to the standards. You've got a 1990 benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
There are some changes that are happening from public policy issues that won't indicate fewer automobiles. Matter of fact, we'll have more that don't indicate better emissions controls, but a different formulation of something like gasoline would have the biggest impact on air quality in Portland. And that's the big source of non-point source emissions for particulates and carbon dioxide.
I would, Mr. Chair, just say that we did update the benchmark targets in 96. We revisited all of them. We had agency heads come in. We said, is this still reasonable? Have things changed? What should the target be now? So we do review and update those targets regularly. So it's not as though that was said in 1990 and hasn't changed. I apologize. I'm not really an expert on all the issues that we report on, unfortunately. But
a lot of different disciplines.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to share that slide, for instance, with Director of DEQ and ask him to project where that benchmark bar would be in the year 2003, after this change in formulation.
We will do exactly that, Senator, with the next round. I'm going backwards, sorry. So if you look at the permitting times, which is one of the things that we measure, you'll see that there really there aren't very good trends here. The yellow column is air. The green column is water. These are the percentage of permits issued on time. And you can see they're kind of all over the place. I haven't got an answer for why that is, but we at this point don't have a consistent and clear trend in this area.
Yeah, that's true. When you're talking about municipal water, are you talking about changing the point of diversion or a new water right application? Or
no, these are water treatment, Senator. These aren't water use.
But, Senator, your question goes to the heart of the issue that we're looking at today. Do we have these kinds of... We hear from the agencies what the backlog is and where the bubble is. But it's interesting to see how this benchmarking process might be used in a bunch of different areas to set priorities and get feedback so that we can see how public policy plays out on the ground.
Well, if I may comment on that, Senator. What my hope would be is that we could be using these, and I could have agency heads here with the committee in the interim when you were looking at what your priorities were and where you wanted to go, because that I think that would be a very useful way to set the context for where should we be heading with this issue. Why is this trend heading here or there? So I'd be very interested in being invited to be part of that process if that's something you're interested in. We look at a number of land preservation issues, starting with wetlands. We know that 100% of the base for wetlands is still in place in the year 1998, starting with 1990 as the base. So we have no net loss of wetlands in Oregon in the last 8 years.
Can I give the committee a second to digest that? How many times have we heard about the erosion of wetlands in different committees? Issues in environmental reporting. Yet the benchmark that we
have to do.
Oh, I've been hearing about that.
Have you?
Oh, sure. Didn't you change the filling of the Hyundai set and all that stuff out there on the shoreline?
Actually, Mr. Chair, I mean, you know, the mitigation and banking, I mean, I really haven't heard of loss of wetlands, even in the debate on Hyundai. Debate on Hyundai is about siting in a wetland to begin with, which was their choice. But in terms of the preservation, I mean, I don't think I hear this argument very much at all about the losing the sheer amount of it.
Here's what I'm going to do is go back and look at my stuff in the Wild Oregon journals, and I have a staffer look at some of the web pages, because I hear about wetland loss and deforestation and all sorts of things that I don't think actually are going on.
Deforestation, I certainly hear about. I mean, the uncertainty of forestry practices is such now that it's causing a panic in private landowners, and we hear that a lot, that they're selling off the timber. That clearly is a big concern.
Okay.
We have a slide on that in a minute, actually, Senator.
Okay.
If we look at a number of our water issues, we see that the measure that the Department of Environmental Quality uses for stream quality is the percentage of streams that have increasing water quality and the percentage of streams that have decreasing water quality. So they use this moving average, if you will. And because you've had a couple of wet years, as you noted earlier, Representative Messerly, we have wonderful improving water quality in Oregon right now. We're up to over half of the streams that they monitor in 1997 having improving water quality. If you look at the other side of the coin,
my concern is that how do you measure that? Because the standards are changing. You know, as we bring in temperature standards and other types of standards, been a concern of mine for some time that we're really making tremendous progress. It's just that the standards are changing so drastically that the story that's being told is that we're losing ground. And so you must have some way of maintaining the same standard.
Not only that, Representative Mishley, but in 1997 we had designation of first 907 and then over 1,000 stream reaches in Oregon declared to be water quality impaired because of the temperature standards and the listing of salmonids in the Endangered Species Act. And so we've been saying for years that we've got increasing water quality. And when you read and see the message go forth that we've got 1,000 streams that are water quality impaired, and that's a new finding,
mm-hmm.
You know, everybody automatically thinks that they're just, you know, stinking black water, brackish. And that slide doesn't look like it correlates to anything we're reading and hearing.
To answer the representative's question, we use the DEQ's Water Quality Index. We don't, obviously the Progress Board does not measure this themselves. We use the data which comes from DEQ. I'm not an expert on the index. Maybe you can address the issue of the changing standard and water temperature, because I think water temperature isn't part of the index, as I recall.
Let me comment on that, because it's an important point. And when I talk about the science panel work, I'll mention this, but one of the things the science panel is doing is looking at the data for the DEQ water quality index, but also unraveling all the parts to it. That is, the index that DEQ uses is sort of synthetic index, and lots of parts go into it. And so it seems important to us as the sort of scientific viewpoint is to unravel and see if, in fact, temperatures contributing to it, or nitrogen contributing to it,
right,
or
is all boxes done or BOD.
Yeah, what are we really measuring? Okay. What are we really looking for? Doctor, how long will it take you to make your portion of the presentation?
I can do it, I guess, however long you want. I can probably do it in 5 minutes if I need to, or take longer, whatever is your
okay. Time. Because the Senate side serves at 9:30 on the floor session today. And
we're not doing anything important, though, Mr. Chair. We can stay
well,
here.
We never do. We just go through and spend money and tell lies. So.
That was for the record. Anyway.
Is that you speed up, Senator?
No, I was just going to suggest this, that we have until 9:30 before we lose our membership account.
Okay, great. Okay. Sorry. And on the other side of the coin, as I was saying, in 1997, we saw zero streams with decreasing water quality. And once again, it has a lot to do with how much water is in those streams. And we've had a couple of very rainy years. And in terms of the assessed groundwater, which is another one of the benchmarks, we know that about 95% of the assessed groundwater, and that's not all groundwater, it's just the groundwater that DEQ actually looked at, meets standards. So that number also looks very good. And this is one that I'm quite happy about, the in-stream water rights issue. We've actually, once again, because it's been wet years, we're way above target for the last 2 years in terms of the target that we have for in-stream water rights. In terms of ag land, you'll notice here that I show a kind of a flat line, but then I have lots of question marks, and the reason for that is because we use a USDA estimate of agricultural land, which is only updated every 5 years. And then it's not available for a couple of years after that, and it's not a very accurate estimate. So these numbers that we're using, we're afraid, aren't real good, but we are still showing, as I'm sure you're aware, slowly diminishing agricultural land base. In terms of forest land coverage, we actually, by the measure of the Department of Forestry, have the same percentage of forest land in Oregon in 1997 as we had in 1990. Those are their numbers. And what we look at is starting in 1970, if you count that as 100%, where are we now? And in 1997, we are at 92% of the forest land that we had in 1970. Department of Forestry numbers.
But you're talking, Mr. Chair.
Sir?
But you're talking, just to make sure I understand this, the land that would be in trees, not necessarily the board feet within those.
Not the board feet.
You could have a 10-year-old forest would be measured the same as a 50-year-old forest.
Absolutely. If it's been harvested and it's been replanted or whatever, it's still forest land. Yeah.
Right.
It's not the amount of standing.
Right.
Usable timber. It's
that could be confusing to people.
Forest land use.
Yeah, you know.
You can have to write in headlines and say 8% of the forest land has been converted to non-forest.
Right, or you know, it also does, the questions I would have, Mr. Chair, are because it's Department of Forestry statistics, it does not include federal land.
No, this is all land in Oregon.
Okay, well that's interesting because of the lack of cutting on federal land really indicates that there's a high use on private land, which verifies the concern about the lack of good, you know, consistent timber practices and, or, I mean, forestry practices, and that's causing people to panic. The other thing that I don't think this accounts for is select cuts.
Yeah, actually, I think this is only land-based.
Nothing to do with cuts.
Right.
None at all. You could cut down every tree in Oregon, and
so it's as long as
there were trees still growing there, it would still be forest land.
Okay, now there's, let me just put the part a little bit. What you've got, I think, requested in the 92% is the 8% that's been converted probably legally from forest mm-hmm. use to pasture land, or subdivided, or converted into other land
right.
uses.
Exactly.
What's interesting to me is that you go in 1990 and 91, you had a drop, which would indicate conversion. Then you must have had afforestation,
mm-hmm.
Which would account for 10% increase in 92. That's an anomaly. I'd be interested in trying to...
If I could just make a comment, Mr. Chair, all the key benchmarks, we have a two-page write-up on in this report, and it talks about afforestation and all those other issues, why we are where we are. So, if you have any questions, look through the book. I'll keep moving ahead here. In the area of solid waste, which was a big issue in the 70s and 80s, a prosperous economy has, in fact, caused us to increase the generation of solid waste per capita in Oregon.
Don't think those folks of us that live near Arlington or represent that district will appreciate your work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We also measure the percentage of Oregonians that have substandard sewage disposal, and it was at 1% in 1997. So we have lots of them that are sort of on the margin and, you know, might fall over the edge, but we've seen a significant drop from 5% to 1% in just 6 years. So that's another A for us. That's a plus. We also are at the target for hazardous waste in terms of the percentage of sites that are either clean or in the process of being cleaned up. Wild Salmon Steelhead, I don't need to tell you about what's happening in that area, but as you can see, the benchmark that we use, which is the percentage of wild stock in key sub-basins at target levels, has dropped from about half in 1990 to a continuing 2% in 95, 96, and 97.
Now, these also, interestingly, correspond with the same cycle in weather. In mm-hmm. El Nino and La Nina.
Yeah.
And if that pattern holds, you'll see a step up in 98, 99, 2000 based on the wet weather conditions.
That is true, Mr. Chair, but no one's expecting it to be back up to 48% by the year 2000. At least no one that I'm aware of. And then in terms of the sort of the larger eco system questions, we measure healthy native fish and wildlife species. That has dropped from 76% in 1991 to 72% in 1998. Just the actual raw numbers of those species that are healthy. And then in terms of healthy native species, we have actually seen a little increase in that, but we're not at the level we set as a target.
The slide before that. You have wildlife and fish
mm-hmm.
together here,
right.
And we've already seen that the wild fish stocks are way down. So, if you were to remove the fish aspect of that, it makes me wonder where the wildlife is. And it sounds to me like you might be doing very well in wildlife, considering how far the fish are down.
Well, the way this works, Aaron Metzger, is each species counts as one.
Right.
So if there were five salmon species or three salmon species that were on that list, out of the whole number of wildlife, of native wildlife species, it wouldn't make a huge impact. I mean, that's only three of, I don't know how many there are in the state, but a lot. So, yes, we are. If salmon wasn't so important, we wouldn't have seen a separate slide on that. It would have been included here.
I just think it'd be interesting to see what the wildlife species healthy is.
Uh-huh.
You know, minus the fish. We've got the fish isolated.
Right.
Just seems kind of interesting. This.
I would be happy to track that number down if you'd like to see
it. Yeah, I'd just be curious to see what it is.
That's the end of my remarks, actually, and I will hand it over now to Dr. Risser, unless anybody has any other comments or questions.
Okay, thank you. Let me see if I can't be efficient here in presenting the State Environment Report. This is an effort really to build on the first steps taken by the Progress Report and to do really two things, step back and ask again. In fact, the Progress Board benchmarks are the best indicators we have for the environment in the state. And then secondly, are there indicators which can be more helpful to us in terms of eventually setting public policy, but in the meantime, understanding exactly the status of the environment in Oregon? And to do this, the Stewardship Plan Committee, which consisted of about 25 different stakeholders, who made a recommendation to the Progress Board that it undertake a study of the environment. The Progress Board agreed to do that and established a panel of about a dozen scientists, and among the handouts that you have is one which lists the members of the science panel. the members of the science panel are all very accomplished scientists, And I would, I guess, take this moment to say that these individuals all serve without any compensation and have made significant contributions to this whole process. From the beginning, this was a very interesting process because it involved science, I think, at the top level, but it also was closely intertwined with what the public thinks about scientific issues in terms of their importance. And so one of the first steps that we did was to ask a whole series of stakeholders plus panel members what the most important environmental issues in the state of Oregon really were. And there is a, on your handout, there's a matrix which says prioritization matrix, and it's pretty interesting because this was a question we asked in terms of the land-based or aquatic-based systems and in terms of water quality, soil quality, fish and wildlife, plant and air quality. What do you think the most important issues are in the state of Oregon? And the numbers here simply list the priorities given by the various constituencies. A couple of points are of interest. One of which is you'll see that most of the high numbers and the size of the numbers, that is the size of the print, this indicates the highest values, that most of those tend to focus on water. And the second point, which was of interest, was that the scientists and the public all agreed pretty much on what the most important issues were as we began the process. So that was the first way to focus. Since there are lots of environmental issues that we could look at, then the question is, how should we focus on the most important ones? The science panel meets quarterly with a larger group of people to discuss how the science panel is going about its work.
Can you stick to the matrix for just a minute, Dr.
Sure.
Yeah, I think this thing bears some looking at because, first of all, it took me a couple of minutes to figure out how the matrix works. But number one issue, obviously, water quality and fresh water. I thought that was very predictable. The second issue of importance to these 30 folks that come from a really broad cross-section of people was agricultural water quality and quantity, which I think that means the irrigation runoff and some other issues that were connected to non-source point pollution. The third most important issue, and I guess this really was also very predictable, was aquatic habitats, fresh water and fish and wildlife species quality and quantity. What was surprising for me, I guess, was to see that Westside Forest and then the urban water quality and quantity and then groundwater. So of the top six issues, I think, what was it, five of them related to water quality. So obviously water is the number one issue environmentally for Oregonians. Following that would be forestry issues, and the thing that was surprising to me was how forest health affects fish and wildlife quality and quantity. And then estuary quality and quantity. And you don't, it's the ninth tier of concern before you get to land-based issues. They're almost all connected to water quality and quantity issues. So whatever the message, I mean, whoever's putting the message out that water's the most important environmental issue, you know, look at that group to find out how they communicate because they're really getting into a lot of people's gray matter. Senator?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think just in line with what you're saying, that analysis also, when you see that marine, aquatic marine concerns, fish and wildlife, ranked 20th, indicates that they're not doing a very good job of educating people about the salmon cycle. You know, that's such a big aspect of everything we hear. I'm sure you've heard it in this committee. You've certainly heard it in water and land use and in natural resources. And it's interesting disconnect between those two issues.
Yes, Senator, Mr. Chairman, I think that's right. I would make two comments, one of which is I found this absolutely fascinating because it really is a function of sort of communication as much as science. And the second point is the science panel reserved the right to use this when it found areas which it thought needed more attention, for example, the ocean, then it would make recommendations and not be tied directly to the matrix itself.
And then there was an issue, or not an issue, but another way to look at the thing, and that was by prioritizing the ecosystems on the bottom margin. And clearly the aquatic ecosystem in fresh water was the big issue of focus. And then all riparian areas. But then immediately you go to Eastside Forest Health, which I thought was a hop that I guess I didn't understand that in terms of how the rest of the matrix shook out. But it's one of those issues that people have been hearing about and talking about.
Clean Stream Initiative?
Well, probably, and no one 30 or the 38 initiative, the 64 initiative, and but forest health, unraveling forest health is really a clearly communicated issue. So that's interesting to see what gets into people's gray matter. And then relatively unexpected was the fourth ecosystem, and that's west side forest health.
And if that relates to salmonids and streams, I understand that. We know about Swiss needle caps, as we've just been hearing about that. But I have thought people believe that west side forests, because of the relatively low level of timber harvesting, were relatively healthy, and that the health was increasing in west side. But they don't feel that way.
But, Mr. Chair, you might be misreading that. I mean, I think that has more to do with salmon issues than anything. I don't think it has to do with forest health per se. Probably some of it's confusing in any matrix if you don't have strong definitions and somebody's just taking a shot at it. The considerations of fish might be as important as Swiss needle cast to someone else.
Exactly. Although I do think the fact that Mr. Chairman, I do think the fact that the riparian shows up as a top priority might well be that linkage. But you're right. We're speculating on how people got to the conclusion.
Right.
And then the other thing is that relatively low on people's area of concern are the urban ecosystems. And it's one of those things that I think you have to conclude that with the exception of maybe two people out of the 30, they're urban-based. Now, I don't think that speaks to prejudice. It speaks to what they're familiar with. I think they're familiar with the urban land base, and they don't have as great a concern because they're in contact with it daily. The concerns tend to be outland concerns. So problems are somewhere, but usually they're elsewhere.
But they also are.
Yeah. Question?
This chair was out for a little bit, but I'm curious on agricultural land, and then I look at the slide where it looks like we're doing pretty good, and I realize that's you only get that figure once every 5 years. My question is, we're losing ag land, I think. The concern is that we're losing the high-quality ag land, and we're stabilized on the marginal lands and the poor-quality ag land, and so it's kind of a misleading picture we're getting here that
If I comment on that, Mr. Chairman, and I would, you were out of the room, and I made my little spiel for the report, but we actually have a two-page write-up on loss of ag lands in this report, which essentially says that this is a measure that measures all ag lands, whether it be east side rangeland, whether it be Willamette Valley, rich farmland, and this is not a good measure of the issue that you just raised, and it's one that we really want to change.
Right. In fact, if I could naturally use that for an example, I think one of the things we're trying to accomplish here is to look at the benchmarks that we have, and some of the benchmarks that you saw from the progress board are sort of management issues, like how fast are permits issued, and that's not a measure really of environmental quality, that's a function of the process, and the similar designation in terms of farmland, whether you differentiate marginal farmland or plain farmland. What we're trying to look at here is sort of land use cover and much more finely defined characteristics so we can sort out those kinds of differences. The products that the science panel anticipates producing really are primarily two, one of which is a report. And the schedule is that we will finish the report in draft form by the end of this summer and then use the fall months of September, October to take that draft report around and to listen to lots of input. People respond to that and raise issues and then complete the report by the end of this calendar year. The second and I think important point is that we're also seeking to develop databases which are on the web and therefore are available. And the important point is that kind of questions that Representative Messley just asked, you should be able to go to the databases and look at those and see what they really are. And so we'll be able to see the basis for the kind of conclusions that we are making. Another important point that I want to make is that certainly the state of Oregon is not uniform across the state, and so the science panel has divided the state into what's called ecoregions, and you have a colored map there, and I don't want to spend much time on this except to say that there are about 8 different ecoregions which are defined, and so the study by the science panel will look at each of these ecoregions independently so that we don't try and compare very different conditions across the state, but rather put them in similar kinds of conditions. The ecoregions are based on similarities based on vegetation and climate and soils and topography and parent material, lots of different variables. And so they're meant to be fairly homogeneous within each of the regions, although we all know that considerable variation among those. Now, there are a couple of important points that the science, I guess the point I'd like to make here is that the decisions that the science panel makes can have big impacts on the kind of results that come forth. And so the fact that we focus on ecoregions says that the kind of results we produce will be for each ecoregion. And then at the end of the report, we'll step back and look at the state as a whole. So we'll try and synthesize across the state. We've also, the matrix you, I showed you earlier was the first one that we used, and we've actually modified that slightly. You'll notice, for example, there's really no rangeland category in that, so we've modified that a little bit, but we'll continue to work on those kinds of resource characteristics. That when we began to look at this, one of the biggest challenges for the science panel is to say, if you put out benchmarks, to what do you compare it? That is, what's the healthy stream, for example, or healthy forest, or healthy rangeland, or healthy urban area? And so the science panel has begun to develop a sort of way of thinking about how we judge the performance of various kinds of systems. And that there will be several different kinds of measures that we'll use. And the kind of measures, the categories of the measures include the abundance of organisms, the distribution of organisms, key processes like nutrient cycling, for example, or organic matter retention, diseases, rates of productivity, and services to humans. And so the idea is to look at each of the major, here's the sort of bottom line here. The idea is to look at each major resource in each ecoregion on those kinds of criteria, that is, the abundance of organisms, the distribution of them, diseases, processes, and services to humans. And that against that process, we'll then decide what the best indicators are. There might be some of those that the Oregon Progress Board uses now. It could turn out we think those are better ones. Or it may be that we'll use subparts of those, like in the Environmental Quality Index, and use databases which are more refined. Or there may be something which is really quite different from those. And those are the indicators that will come forth from the science panel. The idea is to select about a dozen, which would then be incorporated in the progress report. But then for each of the other systems, we might have many more indicators that we use in terms of policymakers. In other words, we might take, for example, the DEQ Water Quality Index across the state. But we might decide temperature and phosphorus, for example, are also important. So the indicators will include those more detailed ones as well as the more general ones. I think there are a couple of issues.
Question, Representative Chen?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to you, sir. I see your, the socioeconomic indicators you have here. I'm interested in what you have in the interrelationship of the socioeconomic indicators and the environmental indicators. And my interest here is coming, I think, from the fact that all too often I see the emphasis being placed on the environmental indicators and a emphasis on the social and economic indicators. I'm really concerned at how the Congress Board is going to interrelate those for balance and equity. Do you have anything you can help me with on that?
I do, Representative Jensen, the chair, and in fact, the chair, we've had sort of detailed conversations on exactly this topic. And when we began the project, I'll just tell you the logic how we got here, and then I'll tell you where I think we are and where I think we're going to go in this process, because I think there's a little paragraph in the write-up that I've given you here on that topic. Mm-hmm. When we began the process, there was a lot of discussion of whether we should combine both indicators on what I would say natural resources and indicators on socioeconomic all in a single study. And there was a lot of discussion about whether they should be combined or separate. We finally decided that if we wanted to focus on the natural resources and look at those in the most detailed fashion and also exert the greatest expertise in those areas, that we ought to begin separately and then put the two together as the process moves along. And that's a decision that we've made. And so we've focused on the science. If you look at the science panel membership, those are people who know natural resources. Although there's economists on there, they're not really socioeconomic kind of expertise. We've taken a whole series of steps to make sure that they come together, and furthermore, that we think about socioeconomic throughout the process. One of the criteria that I mentioned to you in terms of the indicators, remember, was services to humans. And that's one of the characteristics when we look at the natural resources indicators from the science panel is use to humans, and that's the first step of trying to make sure we do connect it with socioeconomic concerns. The second one is, as I just indicated, that we're looking at this in terms of each ecoregion, and in the evaluation of each ecoregion, we're putting that in the context of a discussion of the socioeconomic conditions in each ecoregion. That's to make sure that we, when we think about natural resources, that we don't think about them just independently, but also in terms of how they relate to the socioeconomic conditions. And through the Progress Board, we've involved OEDD in helping to bring together that data that we can put in the report. There's also a parallel effort, which is not as far along as the science panel, but a parallel effort which will look specifically at socioeconomic and how those indicators will tie to natural resources. And lastly, I would say that throughout this conversation of the science panel in terms of what indicators they collect and how they go about it, there's been constant attention to the fact that eventually you have to put together so that you don't have what you suggested, natural resource indicators which are completely oblivious to what the socioeconomic concerns are.
Yes. Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Dr. Richard. But you did point to one of the things that leads me to my concern, and that is the look at the science panel. With one, I think, minor exception, we had one person with agriculture and resource economics, but that's the only person I see on the science panel with any expertise in the socioeconomic area. And that leads to a little more of my paranoia, I guess.
Well, Representative Simpson, I understand exactly what you're saying, but what I'm trying to say is that was intentional. That is, there were sort of two possibilities. One is to have a panel which was broadly based in terms of cultural anthropology and sociology and economics and air quality and fish and wildlife and soils, and our belief was when we started the project that if we had such a broad committee, it would be difficult for us in the period of time that we had and the resources we had to sort of hammer in and look at natural resources as thoroughly as they need to be looked at. And so the decision was made to focus the panel on natural resources, realize a parallel process would happen, but continue to cross-link that throughout. And the chairman and I and Jeff have had some conversation, and I think I would say all of us share the same concern you are, and there's absolutely a great commitment to make sure that connection happens throughout the process.
Senator Corbin.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just along those lines, you said that you would basically put out the draft document for, in essence, a peer review and larger than a peer review, a review by other people. I think one of the fascinating overlays, I really like this idea of having these things come from two different directions, socioeconomic and the natural resource. But I'd like to see, just as a rural legislator, I'd really like to see OEDD respond to those two sets of data. Because then, you know, with that kind of overlay, that's sort of the missing piece that sort of goes beyond socioeconomic. I mean, socioeconomic is just descriptive. Then we can go to an analysis of what's working and what's not, because, you know, we get these employment division statistics all the time. I'm very aware of those. And they're very valuable on one level. On another level, they leave you helpless. You know, so I really, when you get these responses, it would be really helpful, I think, from a public policy perspective to see something in writing, just engage discussion about, you know, what kind of analysis from a OEDD perspective they get in that information.
Well, we've got a new sort of synthesis, too, and you know, sort of reinvention theory, but community solutions issues, benchmarking, and a number of other things. And the question that public policy makers have to wrestle with is, are the you know, who sets the benchmarks and how they're set and how they're accomplished is going to really shape how this society unfolds in the next, you know, however many years you want to look down the road. And the question I think Senator Corker might be at is, are we looking at continuing existing trends and then reacting to those existing trends, or are we looking at going across the existing trends to build capacities where they've eroded, or to recognize strong capacities where they exist and make public policy decisions based on those relative strengths and weaknesses? And so, you know, in one sense, you buy the e-ticket and you're along for the ride, and you're looking retrospectively and you're filing at statistics, and you can say, hey, this is where we've been. And, you know, sometimes the future does not repeat the past. Sometimes it goes in a completely new direction. So the question for public policy is, you know, which way do you want to go? Right?
If I could just add just one thing very quickly, that the target-setting process of where we want to go is one that the Progress Board would welcome and invite legislative involvement in, because it is an area that we believe that if it's not owned by the legislature, then it's not owned by the people of Oregon. So we're very open and interested in having more engagement in that area. The other thing I'd just like to add is that we are in the process of hooking up with OEDD right now for doing this. So this is... we're still in conversations with them about it. I don't know exactly how it's going to look.
Before I close the hearing, I just say I think this has great implications for public policy debates throughout the building, and I think it would behoove legislators to connect with the process and help guide the direction of the process now. We are under call of the Senate. We can continue. This is a subcommittee of a subcommittee under Chairman Westland's able leadership, or have one question and then recuse.
I just have a comment.
Comment away.
I apologize for being tardy this morning, but I couldn't agree more with the sentiment I believe I'm hearing here with regard to energizing and validating the benchmarks process. So we don't do enough of it. It's somewhat of a redheaded stepchild, and we don't treat it seriously. And then when there's a benchmark we don't like, we all react and do the knee jerk.
Oh, exactly. Defund the people that wrote the benchmark.
And
obvious.
What I do. Yeah. Wait, means stuff. That's what the hell. I say, we need to spend some time, energy, translate resources on, with Mr. Thomas.
Well, thank you for your comment. I don't think I heard that.
So. No, I don't believe so.
Representative Corkland moves the tax increase.
On Irish American.
Redheaded Irish American.
Hey, Dr. Richter, we really appreciate the time you took, and definitely appreciate the opportunity to have the benchmarks presented to the committee.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That we will adjourn till
Monday.
No, till Thursday. All right, thank you. And we're late.